Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. You can find us on Twitter or X at Bastards_Boston. The Red Sox just took two games out of three against the Rangers in Texas, with Crawford and Boozer winning the first and third games respectively. We now find ourselves in third place with a 59-51 record. We're 6.5 games back, and we're currently 2.5 games back in fourth for the wild card standings behind the Orioles. I am your host, Charlie Smith, coming to you from Los Angeles, California, by way of Providence, Rhode Island. You can find me on Twitter at Smith_MLB. Our other hosts for this episode are Jeremy Schilling, coming to us from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Mass., and Terry Cushman, coming to us from Myrtle Beach in South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine. Jeremy, how are you doing? Where can the fans find you?
I am barely hanging on, and you can find me at JT Schill on Twitter.
I'll take barely hanging on. Terry, how are you doing? Where can the fans find you?
I can be found at CushmanMLB. Terry Talks Sox on Facebook. Find us on Instagram and our Substack blog for all our in-print content. Not doing too bad. I had us sweeping the Rangers. Their pitching was just... I thought it would be trash. It wasn't terrible, but 2 out of 3 nonetheless. And there's a lot of concerns, though, and we're going to be getting into those on the dud side. But
for sure, some concerns. But before we begin, Jeremy, there is one question I have to ask you. I know we're kind of sitting just above the 5 range. What's your number right now?
So after the Dodgers series, I was a 6.3. 5.1 after Seattle. I've improved slightly with this series win at 5.3. My problem, despite the series win, is in 15 innings pitched by the starting pitchers in this series, they gave up 13 earned runs. It's not sustainable. It's absolutely not sustainable. Now, the offense bailed you out in this series, and they plated 22 runs in 3 games, but the starting pitching has become a real serious issue. You know, a month ago, you have Crawford, Houck, Pivetta lined up to pitch in a series. You got a really good chance to win all those games. Effectively, they all gave you a reason why we should have lost those games. So I'm barely hanging on at a 5.3, and that's where I'm at.
Fair enough. 5.3, I suppose that's something that we can take for the time being. Hopefully, the number will slide up, but who knows with the upcoming series that we have headed our way. So without any further ado, I think before we begin, I think all of Red Sox Nation would like to kind of stand behind Willy Abreu. Willy Abreu unfortunately had a loss in his family. So for that, we send our condolences, and you know, we hope that you're able to power through. And naturally, if you need to take some time away from the game, obviously family will always come first. So if you do that, no one should be judging you. And you know, honestly, I would even recommend it, even if it's just a series or a couple of days. Family will always come first. So Sox take the series. That means we're going to start off with studs. Jeremy, why don't you hit us with yours?
The guy that starts the whole thing, Jaron Duran, 6 for 14, 3 extra base hits. three stolen bases. Also scared me beyond anything I could imagine when he pulled up after running down first base and going at his lat. I'm out of my recliner. Season's over. I got to start watching preseason football. That's it. There's no way they can compete without this guy, and he stays in the game. He's in the lineup today. He has two multi-hit games, a hit in every game. And I don't know what, by what miracle he was in that much pain and then fine to play and play like he did today. Sunday, he goes 3-for-4 with a run on RBI, a double, a home run, and two stolen bases. I mean, unbelievable. He's my favorite Red Sox right now. I love the way he plays the game. I love his personality. Absolute stud the whole series and has been for the whole year. I can't wait to see how he continues to progress through the season, where his overall numbers end up and where he is in the MVP race, you know? So
absolutely. Terry, anything to add?
Well, Duran and Rafaela are both trying to be a part of the 162 club, essentially, by playing every game. So it was important to Duran to stay in there. But I think that home run today in the finale kind of solidified the fact that he must be relatively healthy to put a swing like that on the ball. And it's nice to see the power stroke. We were talking about these guys before we came on, and you know, I was saying how I think a couple other guys, young guys in the lineup, have a good ways to go. Like, their ceiling is a bit higher than where they're at now. And you know, Duran is, I think, kind of close to his ceiling. But the one thing we agreed that he could kind of, you know, one area where he could elevate himself further is if, you know, the home runs, you know, keep ticking up. Did he have another triple in the series? I thought he did. Or was that last series?
He had one Friday night.
Friday night. Okay.
It was one.
Gotcha.
It's pretty.
So that's his 13th. Excuse me. I think I just misspoke. Looking at doubles. Yes, it is his 13th. League leading 13th triple of the season. His 20 home runs, like, excuse me, I'm just like tripping over myself. So I think 14 on the season now. He's definitely going to get to 20. Guess where his WAR is right now?
He's like fifth in the bigs. He's behind Soto, Judge, Henderson, Witt. I'm guessing fifth.
Well, he's got a 6.1 WAR. So hang on, let's see.
I'm guessing that's fifth. Judge has to be one.
Well, he was. Let's see.
I'd be shocked if he's not.
You're absolutely right, Charlie. 6.1. So everybody's kind of ticked up a bit. Even Bobby Witt Jr. has kind of leapfrogged a few players to get to.
Do you guys know how good Bobby Witt was in the month of July? The guy hit 489.
Did he?
I think he was 44 for 89 in the month. I mean, that's unheard of.
It was like the third or fourth best month of July in the history of the game or something like that.
Yeah.
He's insane.
It was absolutely insane. I got to look up his month of July. I might have misspoken. 44 for 90. And he went 489, 7 homers, 22 RBIs, stole a couple of bags, had 8 double. I mean, God, last year it was Julio Rodriguez and Mookie Betts that had insane Augusts, but nothing like that. That's insane. It was one hit off of 500. That's remarkable. He's incredible.
Yeah, and, you know, 6.1 at the moment. Aaron Judge leading all of MLB, 7.5. We're about to see Bobby Witt for the next three games. Interestingly, though, if we're looking at the WAR category, Jaren Duran is just a tick over Shohei Ohtani. So what if I told you that in the first week of August, Jaren Duran would have a higher WAR than the unicorn himself?
Yeah, Shohei doesn't play. He's a DH. So, you know, he's not pitching and he's not fielding. So his WAR of, you said it was 6.2? What's Shohei?
His is an even 6.
Okay, so just imagine that. It's 6 without pitching, without fielding. And he's the first natural DH with 30 homers, 30 stolen bases. He could legitimately hit 50 home runs and steal 50 bases this year. It could happen.
Guess who's 10th on there, and he's a third baseman. You'll never guess.
It's not Ramirez.
Nope. That might have been my guess, but
third baseman
would be a good guess. I'm pulling this stuff up right now. I can't believe this.
Hold on, third baseman. It's not Josh Young because he didn't play. It's not. It's not Devers.
Nope.
Who's the best third baseman statistically speaking? It's not Arenado. He's been garbage.
I'm just going to, you're not going to get it. It's right. Matt Chapman of the Giants.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's got to be
Matty Chaps.
Yeah, 16 home runs.
What's he hitting, like a 220 though?
244 is on base is about, it's 90 points higher. An OPS plus of 120, which is really good. I'm guessing he's always been an elite defender here. Let's see. What's his D war? 1.4. So no, most of that comes from the offensive side, but
he's had a good year. He's had a really good year. You know, he's never had 100 RBIs. He's come close, but he's never had 100, and he's always been like the pinnacle of defense over at the hot corner. So
I didn't think that was going to be a good signing for the Giants, but at least year one's looking good. Getting back to Duran though, I mean, he's perfectly in line for a 2080 season, and I'm guessing. He's at 24. Is it? This might be old. It's either 24 or it was 24 coming into today. And I know he had what, 2 stolen bases today, something like that.
Duran had 2.
Yeah.
And I think Hamilton ended up having 3.
Did he? One of those. Okay.
Games. Yeah. He had. It might have just been 2. I thought he had 3. But that was in the finale. Yeah. He had a home run in front of his family too. He had like a boatload of family here for this series because he's originally from Texas. So that was kind of cool for him to like absolutely go moonshot for his 6th of the year. So he's from Texas originally.
26 stolen bases on the year. So he's got a chance to get to 40. That's insane.
Yeah. The Boston Red Sox have never had 2 guys with 40, and there's a chance that we could do it for the first time in 2024. Yeah. It's absolutely insane.
Hamilton's the other guy.
Yeah. Hamilton and Duran. Yeah. I mean, you got Hamilton. He's got 20. What, after 2 today, he's got what, 27?
28, actually.
20. And what's Jaren have?
26. The only thing is with Sogard up and possibly Grissom coming up, apparently he had a good weekend rehabbing. I think you're only going to see Hamilton against righties from here out.
That would be a shame.
Well, I just think that's the way they're trending. And I don't think we're going to talk about Sogard, but 2 for 7, his first run, his first hit, drove in 2 runs. So
I had him as an honorable mention. Cool. I think you just got to put him in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else that we want to add on Duran? Let's move into Terry. Who do you have?
Well, I'm going to go with Seydon Rafaela, who has just kind of quietly, you know, from the bottom of the order, continued his basically the pace he's been on. He was, 4 for 12 in the series, hit, 300. Seemed like everybody hit a home run. There was, 1, 2, 3. Thought there was more than 3 home runs, but my notes could be wrong. But in game one, he went yard. That was the 11-6 win on Friday night. We just tattooed Urena. But, you know, playing well on both sides of the ball. In the last month, Rafaela is hitting 293 with a 322 on base. So Only drawn two walks. I'm gonna probably complain about that for the rest of his career at this point, but whatever. He's been a borderline stud and really exceeded expectations all winter long. I mean, everybody was trying to put him in trade packages. We figured he'd be the trade bait and whatnot. And being the only righty, I thought that was a bit of a long shot. But this was a guy that I thought would end up in Worcester at least once to figure it out. And all year long, he had a kind of a slow April, but ever since he's been very productive. Just in the last week, he's hitting .346 with a .392 on base. So, and a .462 slugging. I mean, that's not great, but it's not terrible either. You know, he's hitting the ball hard. So,
absolutely
good series for him. And you know, it's a very, very much a next man up team, and he's often that guy.
No, absolutely. Jeremy, anything you'd like to add about Sadon?
I mean, obviously I agree with a lot of, I mean, how could you not? The second time through the order, if Rafaela gets on, it puts even added pressure with Duran coming up. Today they had a double steal of second and third. Obviously Rafaela was the lead runner. You know, dynamic player. The thing I'd add is, man, do I love that contract now.
Oh yeah.
Like, how smart does that look?
Oh yeah. Huge steal.
You know, so I know I'm not a huge Breslow guy, but you got to give Breslow credit for that. And we were mentioning earlier when we were kind of just chatting, waiting to get going, how are any of these players at their ceiling? And I honestly think Rafael is only going to get better. Like Terry mentioned, if he learns a little bit more plate discipline, specifically the slider off the plate, and can just lay off that, I mean, he can really be a dynamic guy, the type of guy where we're talking about war, like we're talking about Duran. You know, that's how I think he still can improve. Again, he's the perfect example of he's developing in the big leagues. I think in another organization, he wouldn't have started out the year on the big league club, but here we are. This team, you know, has holes. And so they sign him and they put him in the lineup day one and they play him every day. And the other thing that I give him a lot of credit for is his ability to overcome his early season struggles. That could have been a demotion. That could have been a setback in his career. Instead, he continued to push forward and just excel. So I'm a huge fan of Rafaela. Again, I love the way he plays the game, clearly enjoys the game. And, you know, I'm looking forward to many years of Sadane Rafaela.
I couldn't agree more. He's just so fun to, he's just so fun to watch. I mean, it's interesting when you hear, was it Marrero and Middlebrook say that he's not that good as a shortstop. I mean, the guy has crazy pop time when he's going down to make crazy dives at short too. I mean, he's phenomenal there too. He can play short, he can play center. I hope he can play anywhere pretty much. I mean, you put him anywhere, he's going to say yes. He's an absolute team guy. Had a 9-game hitting streak going into the last game, multi-hit game, back-to-back for the first two in Texas. Mammoth shot. I would be shocked if Sadon Rafaela doesn't finish in the 20-20-20 category. 20 doubles, 20 homers, 20 stolen bases. I think he has the ability. He's so close. He is at, I believe, 16 doubles. He's got 13 homers, and he's at 16 stolen bases. So, I mean, he's creating havoc everywhere, at the dish, on the field, on the base paths. And, yeah, I mean, I said this once before, but I think that Sadon Rafaela could be our fix for the loss of Mookie Betts in a couple of years. Like, I have nothing but high hopes for Sadon. Is he Mookie Betts? No. Mookie Betts was a Mookie Betts for the first 2-3 years of his career either. He's just been so exciting, and he just hasn't put a foot wrong. You know, he just does not let the down days get him too down. Anything else we want to add on Sadon? Yeah, T, go ahead.
So his strikeout rate is 25.6 on the season. That's not great, but it's not terrible either. I mean, we've seen a lot of guys in the 33 to 36 range, and I can't seem to get the numbers. I wonder if I could do it. Oh, that is post All-Star. No, I'm looking at something else, but his strikeout numbers were kind of, he was either him and Duran were kind of leading the team the first couple of months. But since the All-Star break, I mean, he's got 11 strikeouts. I mean, that just goes to show you, even though the walks aren't there, the plate discipline isn't terrible. You know, he's being patient. He's waiting for his pitch. And I think I gave a take where in the earlier part of the season, I said, you know, he was playing checkers when everyone else was playing chess, and he needed to get better, you know, at the chess game with the pitcher, you know, when anticipating how the pitcher was going to attack him. And I think he's made a lot of strides in that area. So love to see it. And, you know, when he comes up to bat, I always feel like he's got a chance to, you know, to rip a double or, you know, bring another runner home. He helps the team in so many ways.
So how many times has Sadon Raffaello walked twice in one game this year? Zero times, okay. Right? He doesn't walk that often. Terry, I figured you would have said zero right away. Like, wouldn't even let me finish the sentence. If Sadon Raffaello could draw more walks, what aspect of his game right now would we have to critique? Honestly,
nothing.
You're playing wherever we ask you to play. You're hitting home runs. You're hitting doubles. You're playing phenomenal defense. You're being a yes man team player. I mean, dude, he's at how many? What does he have for total walks in the year? 15, 20? I don't even know. Let me see.
I got it here. 12. 12
That's
walks.
Low. It is low. Like, I hear you. It's low. But you know what? This is a guy that still his first full major league season. He's played almost every single game. I'm not going to say anything bad. You know, this guy is just a grinder. He's going to do whatever you ask him to do. He's just loving the game and having so much fun doing it. So a couple of other honorable mentions in this one. Mr. Sogard got his first opportunity to start here in Boston, and there was some family connections here. I think his family is also Boston Red Sox fans. And for his first major league hit, played it two in right field. So his first hit was an RBI, a two-run single in Texas, which was pretty spectacular. Obviously saved the ball, pretty special moment. Didn't seem fazed by it. You know, this is a 26-year-old rookie. I don't know how long Sogard will be in Boston. I'm really not sure, but it's still exciting to see him do well. You know, he did strike out three times in this one. We also got our first opportunity to see, at least my first opportunity to see, Lucas Sims pitch as a member of the Red Sox. I know he also pitched in Seattle too. I didn't get to watch him pitch in that one, but he comes out, inning and a third, struck one out. Almost the entire performance was strikes. He only threw one or two balls. Loved it. I mean, my God, just incredible. For my stud, I want to talk about Willy Abreu for a second. I think it's incredibly strong of any person to deal with a personal matter and have the mental fortitude and strength to overcome those challenges and be able to, I guess, just table the distraction, for the lack of a better term, for just a moment and flip that into an absolute positive. Willy Abreu, 5-for-11 in the series, 3 home runs, 7 RBIs, a pair of singles. Yes, he struck out 5 times, got his first multi-home run game. So just an absolute warrior. Willy Abreu has been struggling quite a bit as of late, and he's just been able to quiet all the naysayers. You know, this is a guy who had 3 home runs in all of July, 3 home runs in this series alone. So hopefully this is the page turning for Willy Abreu. I really hope that's the case. losing a family member is never easy. And I know that some people, they don't necessarily recover right away. And he was able to just put the pedal to the metal and just keep giving it to the Rangers. Absolute incredible performance by Willy Abreu that I just don't think we can say enough good things about. And, you know, two multi-hit games, three hits in the first game, two hits in the third game, home runs in two of the three games. I mean, dude, I hope this is just the beginning for him. Jeremy, anything you want to add?
Did you mention seven RBIs total?
Seven ribbies, so, man.
Yeah, so the thing that caught me off guard today was O'Brien on the broadcast said that he now leads rookies in OPS at 591, I think. Or I forget the actual number on the stat because that number's obviously not right. So, I mean, and then I was listening live at the time. I watched some of the recap on the TV, but live on the radio, and Lou Merlone was talking about how he's a candidate to win Rookie of the Year. Caught me a little bit off guard because I think Rafaela, for example, has been more consistent throughout the year. But he's getting that sort of recognition now. Another player, to go back to our off-air discussion, which I'm bringing on air, about players at their ceilings. I don't know where Abreu's ceiling is. Could he be a 3,100 guy? I don't think he's going to be as good as Devers. Devers is probably going to be in the Hall of Fame. But, like, could he pop for 3 to 5 years and have those kind of numbers while playing above-average defense and really solidify himself as an all-time right fielder for the Boston Red Sox? You know, it's kind of odd to be talking about it because he had been struggling. But,
right.
I mean, this series, he just looked like a totally different player. So, I mean, you know, I have a different feel while he's hitting now. I feel optimistic. I feel like he's going to put a good approach together and put the ball in play with hard contact, and that's what he's done. I mean, the home runs are obviously a bonus.
I'll say this much real quick, Terry, before you weigh in. If Willy Abreu ends up turning out to be like the Trot Nixon of the Boston Red Sox, 20, 25 homers, 85, 90 RBIs, 270, 290, you know, he'll steal a couple bags as well. If he ends up being that, that's awesome. You have that right next to Sadon Rafaela in center field. I mean, that's 2/3 of your outfield locked. Like absolutely dead set. And I would have nothing bad to say about either one of them if that is your center field and right field. If he ends up being a Trot Nixon type, you know, in his early 2000 years, he was in that 20-25 homer range, you know, 80-90 RBIs on average. The guy was locked in for a good two, three year window. That was his best 3 year window ever. And if he ends up being like that, I'm totally cool with it. I'm not upset. If he can even take it a tick further and go 3,100, I think there would have to be a couple things that change. I think the Red Sox would have to get another, you know, bat in there. And I'd be curious where Willy Abreu would be batting in that lineup too, because I don't think Sadon Rafaela is going to be your 9 guy next year or your 8 guy. I don't see it. Terry, anything you want to add to Sadon? Or excuse me, Willy Abreu, excuse me.
Yeah, so Trot Nixon is a pretty good comp. The guy I was going to actually go with is JD Drew, healthy JD Drew, just to be specific. But Drew hit from the left side. He was a pretty good corner outfielder defensively. And we talk about the bugaboo with Rafaela not drawing walks. With Abreu, he still hasn't made any progress whatsoever with lefties. When I last checked, he was hitting 197. I'm not sure what the OBP was on that, but and right now he's hitting 195. So the one thing he did do this series was he got his first home run against a lefty. So I guess that's something you can check off the board, but he needs to make a little bit of progress with that. We're in a situation where we're in a dogfight. We're trying to, you know, fight for our way into that third wild card spot. We're two and a half games behind. I think somehow we lost a half a game. I don't know how that was possible this weekend. I think we were two games back going into the weekend, and we're showing two and a half now. I don't know if another team might have had a doubleheader or not, but regardless, you know, we don't really have the luxury, at least at the moment, of necessarily throwing them in there against lefties, especially when you got guys like, you know, Ref Snyder, who hits is a lefty killer, and you're still going to want O'Neill in the lineup. So we'll see, but I think his ceiling is higher, much higher than where he's at now.
Yeah, to your point, the Royals actually faced the Tigers after the Chicago White Sox, and they ended up taking three games out of four against Detroit. So there's your other half game.
Oh, it was a four-game series. Okay.
Four-game set for KC, yeah. Because if we didn't play three, they would have had to have been the team with four.
Gotcha.
Yeah, they're 6-1 in their last seven, so they're on an absolute heater. Kansas City, that is.
And they have us next.
Yeah, it's going to be colorful.
I think in Kansas City, if I'm not mistaken.
It is in Kansas City, correct.
Yeah. But so with Rafaela, you know, excuse me, I'm getting it mixed up.
That's my fault. Sorry. Cause I said it earlier. That's my fault.
With, Willy Abreu, he's a guy that I'm excited about. I just, you know, I keep talking about the painful trade. Perhaps it doesn't involve him, but eventually one of our big lefties is going to get moved, and not sure who that'll be, but unlike Rafaela, he does draw walks. 25 on the season. That's not bad.
Not bad at all. No. So we talked about a couple real quick. We talked about a couple of other honorable mentions. I don't know if there was anyone specific that you gents wanted to add. I mean, obviously you had Ref Snyder, who we didn't talk about. He absolutely went off in game two. He had a crazy day, a single, a double, I believe his first multi-home run game, three RBIs, drew a walk. Every plate appearance was just damage. I'm in absolute awe of what this man has been able to do, because he just – he went hitless in the third game, but this was a guy that I literally had said I don't know how they were going to try to find a spot for him. That's a career high in home runs now. He had six back in 2022. He's up to seven so far. He might hit 10 before the season's over. And if the Red Sox aren't going to be giving him a contract extension, there's going to be a team that's probably willing to give him a two-year deal. And it's going to be a little tough to let him go, but, you know, more power to him if he's able to get something in the 2-for-16 or 2-for-20 range. Maybe there's a team willing to do that for him because, you know, he's 33 years old. Who knows? But yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if there was any other studs in particular. You know, Connor Wong also had a stupid game one. Anybody else that you guys want to talk about?
Yeah, Wong had a hit in every game.
Yeah.
They're finally doing what I've asked them to do for basically the entirety of the season, which is playing him twice in every series. So it took trading McGuire to do it, but he's been great. One of the best offensive catchers in baseball. Carlos Boozer. I'm thinking of a basketball player. My bad. Cam. Yeah. Boozer pitched, two-thirds of an inning on Friday and again on Sunday with 1 1/3 to in big spots, lowering his ERA for the season down to 2.65. Underrated guy that got demoted kind of out of the blue last month, has bounced back. He's been really consistent. And Cora continues to trust him in more important roles. So I think he deserves a head nod.
I also want to add Brandon Bernardino. I feel like he's a, you know, honorable mention and dishonorable mention, because the guy, when you're up by, you know, there's no opportunity for, you know, you to get absolutely slayed. He comes out and he strikes out the side. But when you need him to pitch lockdown, he falls apart. It's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde with him. You don't know what you're going to get, and it's really frustrating. He comes off today – striking out the side. I'm like, where was that? Where was that in the last one? You know, so it's really frustrating when that happens. Terry, you look like you want to say something.
Well, I mean, in general, it was a very good series for the bullpen, aside from that one blip by Bernardino. Boozer, as Jeremy pointed out, pitched twice. So did Winkowski. We got to see Sims and Garcia for the first time. They both pitched pretty well. Zach Kelly still doesn't look like he's locked in, but didn't pitch a bad outing today in the finale. So you'll take this. I mean, you have Slayton still down, Martin still down. I think he'll be back maybe at some point in the middle to later part of the week.
I heard Friday.
Friday, okay. Yep, so that's on track. We're either playing the Astros or the Rangers starting Friday. But, so pretty good as far as the bullpen goes.
Perfect. Let's, you know what? This is pretty positive. I like it. I don't think the dud section is going to be too bad. Jeremy, why don't you hit us with your dud?
It's going to be bad.
Well, it's going to be bad because it's going to be the reason why we don't make the playoffs. And the reason why, despite the fact that we've won back-to-back series, I am less and less optimistic for the overall balance of the season. The starting pitching has been just dog bleat. And the guy that pitched in the All-Star game and gave up a home run to Ohtani that still hasn't landed has been just not good. And the frustrating part was, for the first two innings, he looked like his old self. I mean, he looked dominant, swings and misses. The sweeper was unbelievable. He was throwing it for strikes. And then the wheels fell off, and he ended up over five innings, eight hits, woof, six runs, all earned, woof. Add in two walks. His ERA is now 3.09, and his WHIP is continuing to rise to 1.14. You know, he's the guy we need more than anything, and he has been awful. So here's his last three outings in reverse order. Against Texas, I just mentioned, six earned. Against New York, three earned. Against Colorado, four earned. Gave up 10 hits in that game. And then my app actually lists the All-Star game where he gave up three earned runs. He just hasn't been good. Now, here's the other concerning thing. Innings pitched across his career, 20, 17 innings, 21, 69, 22, 60, 23, 106, 24, 134 innings. It has to be bothering him. And here's the problem. We're at the part of the season where we can't, you know, I've talked about it, talked about this on this podcast, skipping a start, extending days off. You know, we can't do it. Can't afford it. And the way he's pitching is just going the wrong way, and it's starting to become more and more consistent. I worry. You know, Johnny Fontaine tweeted recently, friend of the program, that he feels like he's going to be out of the rotation by mid-September. I don't think they have a choice. If he's healthy, he's going to continue to pitch, but this has been really bad. And I'm concerned that he's not built up to go the 180 innings that he needs to go to help us get to the finish line.
You just hope that you're not sabotaging next year at this point with an injury. And he's got a very Chris Sale-esque delivery, you know, it's a little bit violent, so we're in uncharted waters with him. But he looks so good there for the first three innings, and then even in the second inning, I mean, Nathaniel Lau lined out right away. He got a force out from Josh Jung, but there was a walk from Adolis Garcia. And then Ezekiel Duran singled, and this is with two outs. And then Jonah Heim, their catcher, just absolutely destroyed one. And the game was tied. And then who was it? Leody Tavares, who I guess has been on a home run tear over the last month or so, hit a solo home run back to back. So, you know, it just went downhill after that. And one of them was a hanging splitter. The other one was a sweeper that just caught too much to the middle of the plate. So I don't know if that's fatigue. I don't know if it's a lack of focus. Perhaps it's both. Perhaps the book is out on him. I mean, if you have a patient lineup and Hauk is just a little bit off and they're not chasing, that's going to be a rough start. Because you're either going to be giving up a lot of hits or a lot of walks. And so I don't know. I don't know how you right the ship. You know, perhaps he's cooked as far as his innings pitched. I mean, two starts from now, he'll be at probably, what, 150 or so? And, yeah, go ahead, Jeremy. One more start? Is that what you're saying?
No, I meant when I put up the signal that I had something I wanted you to finish.
Okay, I'm good. Just go ahead.
So I hate this idea. I know the Nationals did it with Strasburg years ago. I hate this idea that you shut down a guy because he's at a certain cap. I hate that because what is he going to be next year? We're going to get to 134 innings and then we got to shut him down again. Like, he has to find a way to get people out and be an important part of why we win in August, September, and October. So this whole shutting down, this whole like innings limit and all, it doesn't work for the, if you don't think he can throw 180 innings, move on from him. It doesn't make any logical sense. I hate that shutdown. I think the Nationals actually shut Strasburg down a year. They were in the run, they were in the race, or even made the playoffs. And I remember at the time being like, how does this make any sense? What if they get there next year? Are they just going to shut him down again? Well, I mean, at that point, just start him on May 1st so that at least he's eligible to pitch in a pennant race and in potential playoff games. It's not, that just never made sense to me. If you really think that he can't pitch like that at the end of the season, he's not a top end starter, and you deal him for chips that you think can help fill out the balance of the roster. I can't believe I'm saying that. And I don't think the Red Sox are actually considering it. So I don't think this is real. But for the fans calling to shut him down, despite where we are in the standings, you should be then saying to keep him healthy so we can trade him. Because then we're in the same issue the following year. It doesn't make sense.
Well, I think in a perfect world, you would skip a couple of starts and maybe throw Criswell in there. You want his innings to climb, but you don't want them to be stressful innings like they have been. I think that's conducive to an injury, you know. But
well, that's Hauk's fault for not being able to get soft contact and get through some easier innings.
I don't know how he figures it out. You know, he's just finding too much of the plate, and I think he could be a little tired. And if we fall out of this, I would absolutely start skipping some starts. If you can get
if we fall out of it. Yeah. If we fall out of it, I would take him out 100%. Yeah. But that okay. Yeah, you're right. I'm just thinking that we're going to find a way to stay in it. So maybe I'm the one that's delusional.
Well, we got a tough series coming up and we're going to preview that in the next show, but you have to get him to 150 or 160. Cause that's how you get him to 180, 200 next year. So one way or the other, you have to do that. You know, I think it's partly on Breslow for not getting enough depth. You know, even some scrap heap guys. I don't know who that would be. We have Mitch Keller down in the minors. Maybe he could come up for a spot start. That wouldn't be pretty, but and Criswell's been okay. I mean, he went what, 5 or 6 innings against the Rockies, who actually have a decent offense. So his ERA is right around 380 or so. So hasn't been terrible, but it's a very flawed roster. We know this. We've been talking about it all year, and hopefully they get us a little bit more depth next year, like quality depth.
Here's the thing with Alex. So on May 31st, his ERA was down to 1.85. The following month, his ERA jumps up to 4.85, so that brings him up to 2.67. The month after that, 3.38, which jumps him up just a hair to 2.79. But already in this one start, it's up to 3.09. So we've seen his ERA almost doubled. You know, it's gonna continue trending in the wrong direction. He's been able to give you quality starts on paper, six innings, but you know, I don't necessarily blame him as much for this one as much as I did for, you know, some of the other ones. I mean, Bernardino did not do him any favors. And I mean, Rafaela had an absolute laser, which eliminated one of the runs against him as well. But yeah, Jeremy, you're right. They shut down Strasburg in the middle of the playoff run. And I remember thinking, wait, what? You're shutting down your number one pitcher, one of your best toys in the box, because he can't handle it? Is that, I mean, we did the same thing to some degree with Sale, like load management. And eventually, if the goal is to be able to be a guy that can give you 200 innings, you need to get to 200 innings. And it looks like we're going to be possibly barely getting there with Houck, and his ERA is going to be over 4. It wouldn't surprise me if we have another, you know, 2-3 blips in the summer months, because he seems to do well when it's not so warm, but then everyone gets shelled. And I mean, Texas, it's hot, it's warm, so balls are going to be flying out of there. But this wasn't a warm, fuzzy feeling for Tanner Houck. I mean, this is a guy in his last, my gosh, I have to go back. He's got a 1-3 record over his last 9 starts. That's ouchy. That's not going to get it done. And you've seen that ERA again jump from what was 2.08 to crazy just 3.09. So in 9 starts, your ERA has already jumped a full run. I hope it doesn't happen again. This is a guy who's allowed no less than 4 runs in each of his last 3 appearances. So something's got to change. I mean, the Red Sox aren't winning games if we don't score 6 or 7 runs, because our starting pitching is slowly starting to fall apart. We're starting to see the wear and tear on the arms in the starting rotation and the bullpen. So, yeah, things have got to change or it's going to get ugly. I don't think it's going to get Chicago White Sox ugly, but it's going to get bad. Anything else? Yeah, Terry, go ahead.
Yeah, so just in the last 6 starts from Houck, that's 30 2/3 innings. He's given up 21 earned runs over those 30 2/3. So that works out to be a 6.25 earned run average. So it's been ugly for him. And that goes back to June 29th.
You can't live on that. It can't stay like that for the remainder of the year. You're not going to be consistently winning ball games with that. You just can't. Terry, who's your dud? Don't have too much fun now.
Okay, so outside the box, my dud is going to be Tristan Casas. For the second time in about a month, he's misled not only the fan base, but the Boston media. He gave a quote on either, I think it was Thursday or Friday. I think it was Friday, actually. And that was after 1 or 2 rehab games, where he told one of the writers in, Worcester, that every time he swings the bat or every time he makes contact with the ball, he feels like he's getting stabbed in the ribs. And a month ago, it was he said something to the effect of, and don't quote me on this, I probably should have looked it up before I came on here. He had taken, what was it, hundreds of either dry swings or actual swings. And then when the writers went to verify that, it turned out he hadn't taken any. And so Casas's explanation was, well, I was taking them in my mind. So I don't know what this guy's deal is. He's got some antics behind the scenes that aren't not necessarily bad or, you know, stuff that negatively affect the clubhouse, but he's very much a hey, look at me guy. And this isn't really a team that needs a lot of distractions. And Alex Cora, I don't know if it falls under the category of him calling Casas out through the media by Cora simply saying, I don't know what this guy's talking about. We just had a good conversation. He's medically cleared. Everything is fine. And so he's making the manager's job a little difficult. And I don't know why he can't just rehab, focus on that, try to get healthy, and come back and help the team. 2 or 3 weekends ago, I pointed out he's got a maturity problem. That's what this is. You see a guy like Zaydon Rafaela, who has roughly a year less service time, just very professional, doing as the Romans are doing and going about his business. And as we said earlier, putting up a very respectable rookie campaign. Casas, he's been a clown show. And I think we'd all like to see him just kind of rein it in and, like I said, focus on his rehab.
Jeremy?
Yeah, I was on this about a month ago. I don't want to say it was the first one to it, but I got a whiff of this kind of immature look-at-me behavior during an ESPN broadcast where he kind of walked around the dugout. It wasn't just a question and answer session like those things typically are. And he went and he asked Dom Smith about an at-bat where he flew out and made Dom Smith uncomfortable, frankly. I'm not convinced it's not going to be a locker room problem. For a team that largely holds its head down and just kind of plays, like how much do you hear from the stars on this team? Devers has a big game. He speaks, but it's never about him. Duran, same thing. Wong, you never hear from Wong. Rafaela, I mean, I don't know anybody else that we're talking about their interviews. Then add in the fact that this guy is not even with the big league club. He's the exception to the entirety of the team's personality led by Alex Cora. And maybe it's a good thing. Maybe he's like, I don't know. I'm not pretending to know. So I'm not saying it's going to be a clubhouse thing. Johnny, don't at me. I'm just discussing the theory that it could happen. He just sticks out in a clubhouse where everyone's just there to play baseball. Before he even played his first game, he's in right field with some mask on where you can't see him. He had an aluminum wheel and he was applying it to his toes and doing all this. And like Worcester was tweeting he's back and like celebrating. I'm like, what is he doing? You know? And then after the game, he comes out and he basically makes the organization look bad for having him play. You know, I mean, that's one of the problems here. Hey, Casas, are you ready? Yeah, I think I can go. All right, go rehab. Then you go down and you play one game and you make it sound like the team's putting you at risk. And I thought, well, man, he went from dry swings to rehab starts with, I'm not hearing anything about batting practice, live BP. Liam Hendricks threw live BP yesterday. You know, he could be in Boston getting live batting practice right now. So it doesn't make any sense. I still think it's too early. I think personally, the Boston Red Sox said, if we're going to get something out of him, he needs to be in rehab on this date. And they sent him regardless of health. And then he goes and makes the statement that backs up what I thought. And then he reverses course because someone from Boston, probably Cora, called him and said, what the hell are you doing? You told us you were ready. And now you're making us look like we're putting you at risk. It's a complete bleep show. And if Casas told the organization he could go, he should shut up and go play.
I don't know about you two, but I at first thought I'm doing kind of like a reverse course here. I thought it was kind of cool with him giving his interviews in the dugout, but the dry swings thing in your head was one of the bigger head scratching moments. Like you want the attention on you and you're trying to like create positive vibe, but it's fluff. It's all garbage. And it's not setting a good, it's not sending a good message for the Red Sox as a whole. It's actually embarrassing. And if you're making players feel uncomfortable, he's making it so that Boston can't trade him. And Boston will have to extend him and give him like a contract, because only we're going to be dealing with his antics and his games and his 100 dry swings in his head. I'm curious how many of them he actually made contact. We didn't even find that out. So, I mean, if we're going to play this game with Casas, I think we should tell him, listen, until you're back with the club, no more interviews, no more asking questions, no more talking to reporters, because you're making the Red Sox look worse than they are. You're actually sending the message that we don't care. We're trying to rush you. Like Jeremy said, it was a bleep show. It was just embarrassing. And it was just kind of like, what? Like, it's like an attention-seeking child. For what? Why? So I don't know. I think it was poor form and something he's going to have to change his tune to, because this is not acceptable behavior.
So, you know, Charlie, you just said how, you know, you're kind of reversing course, and I'm trying to figure out if I'm reversing course. I mean, when Casas is locked in, I mean, he's insanely clutch at the plate.
Not dry swings, Terry, right? We're talking about real swings, not dry swings.
Yeah, we're talking actual reality.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. Unless I've been hallucinating the whole time, you know, when he's been up to bat. But so it's just, it's so hard. Like, on one hand, you have the antics. On kind of the same hand, you're a little bit skeptical about his long-term health. I mean, he doesn't have the frame of a guy that necessarily is going to stay healthy. But at the same time, would I extend him? Probably. I don't know. The one thing, we can rip apart the antics. We can talk about him being weird. But the one thing he's not is, like, he's not confrontational with his teammates. You don't hear that. You know, he's just kind of on his own program for the most part. But it just makes me wonder if the Red Sox would listen in on calls. Which sounds insane. I don't even know if I want that. I guess I'm just not all the way there yet. But you look at what Dom Smith's done. I mean, he's hitting right around 300 in the last month. Connor Wong had a decent game two at first base. He was 1-for-5, drove in a run. Struck out just once. I don't think playing first base really messed with his, you know, plate appearances at all. So I just don't know if Casas is going to come back and give you better results than what you're currently getting with the two guys. And even Romy Gonzalez is hitting around 280 right now. Not necessarily playing first every time out, but he's had some starts there. So I don't know. One of the benefits of it is if you want to leave your options open with Casas and he comes back and he's productive, you know, maybe you can at least field some calls and see if anyone might be interested. But I don't know.
So there's a direct flight from Fort Lauderdale to Worcester Airport. Right? I jump on that flight and I drive over to the Polar Park, and I would drive Casas to Logan to fly to Toronto in exchange for Vlad Jr. and Roman Anthony. So Casas and Anthony to Toronto for Vlad Jr., and I'd spend the money on Vlad.
Oh, I don't
plays think, every day.
I think you could just do it 1-for-1. I wouldn't. Give
I don't
up.
Think you'd do it 1-for-1. No.
Well, I tried to put Abreu in that deal, and I regretted it on Twitter. Like the minions came after me.
But here's my point. I'm making light of it, but here's my point. What would be your reticence on moving on from Cassis for an established big league player who plays every day? Cassis is not that. You can say what you want about his numbers while he's played, but Terry, I mean, Cassis is no guarantee. He's just not. And anyone that says he is, on what are you basing that? He's about to miss the entirety of the 24 season. And what if he does come back, that it's not something else?
I think from a performance standpoint, I'm comfortable with he is what his numbers say that he is. However, it's just the health. It's the health and durability. That's what I'm not sold on.
So in a weird way, you agree with me.
Yes, Jeremy.
That's all I wanted, Terry. All right, let's move it.
I'm not going to lie. I think Tristan Casas' value just because of the games. I mean, I get it. He's 24 years old. But, dude, there are players that are 2-3 years younger than him and are a lot more mature. So what's going on? Like, what are we doing here, Tristan? You know? So, yeah, go ahead, Terry.
This is not a perfect comp, okay? There's elements that are – or at least a couple elements that are similar. If you remember Yasiel Puig, that dude was out there, like way further out there than Tristan Casas. And there was a little bit of a creepiness too, if you ask me. And Casas isn't that. But man, he was electric in the batter's box and even had some highlight reel defensive plays. But the Dodgers couldn't give him away. They just couldn't give him away. And I think they even demoted him once or twice just to get him away from the team, just to get him the hell out of that clubhouse. And you just wonder if maybe the front office doesn't like the vibe, you know, if it's just too much of a pain. So that when you talk about Casas losing value, I think that would be part of that. That kind of speaks to that in a way. So I got nothing else on Casas.
Yeah, man. We are going to swing it right into my dud for this one. And this one is hard because if I told you Cutter Crawford has given up 12 home runs, and I believe if I heard Millar right, had mentioned first starting pitcher to give up 12 home runs in 3 starts, that's insane. Now, 5 1/3 innings, 5 runs on 6 hits, all earned. 4 home runs, struck out 5, walked 1, 12 home runs in his last 3 games. 10 of those home runs were solo shots. So if you would have heard someone had given up 12 home runs in 3 games, would you be shocked to see that the ERA only jumped by 0.7 or 0.77 with 12 home runs? I mean, the guy who pounded the strike zone is now, they have the blueprint on he throws strikes. How often? All the time. He's pounding the strike zone. So what Cutter Crawford needs to establish is a really good waste pitch. It doesn't have to be the same thing every single time. Just don't throw every third or fourth pitch in the zone. Because they're teeing off. 5 home runs against the Angels. His home run derby is awful. 3 home runs against the Yankees. Not fun. 4 home runs against the Rangers. Brutal. I mean, 12 home runs in his last 3 starts. He's one away from half of the home runs this year in the last 3 starts. Let that sink in. So thankfully, 83% of the home runs allowed have been solo shots. Thank God. Otherwise, your ERA is jumping by over 2 or 1.5. This guy's going to get blown up. So he just needs to find a waste pitch. That's all I'm going to say. Jeremy, anything you would like to add to Cutter's struggles?
I'm going to do the same exercise I did with Hauk. 21, 2 innings, 22, 77 innings, 23, 129 and a third. And this year he's at 127. So his next start, he will be in uncharted territory. That coupled with the fact that this guy absolutely is in love with leaving the ball middle. I don't know. It seems like he can't get better. I don't know. His stuff is just not as good. Maybe guys are starting to see him. So the weird hitch in his rotation and his delivery where he hides the ball really well until he gets to his release point is kind of getting figured out. But we rely on him tremendously. There's no one that's coming to replace Cutter Crawford. So again, we have a lot of guys that are like this. If we're going to continue to stay in it and be in the hunt late, Crawford's going to be better. He has to be better. If he continues to pitch like this, the offense can't carry. He won that game. He was the winning pitcher of record. You can't count on the offense scoring a touchdown and a field goal every game. So, you know, I don't know the path for him. I really don't. I mean, it's not like he has high-end velocity where he can kind of just blow people away. I don't know. I'm at a loss with Cutter Crawford. He's got to be on the edges, I guess, would be my answer. He has to risk having an uptick in walks to stay away from balls going 400 plus feet. And, you know, I guess it's okay if the cutter is a little bit off the plate. At least it's not being hit for a home run. Like, you know, I don't know. I can't believe I'm suggesting somebody walk more people, but like, that's where I'm at with this guy. He just loves leaving the ball in the middle of the plate.
Derek.
Three of those four home runs came on the cutter, which is his second most prolific pitch. He averages, I mean, his four seam fastball, you know, averages 93 miles an hour. He's not blowing people away. I mean, all winter long, I said, I'm not a Cutter Crawford guy. I'm not a Cutter Crawford guy. I just don't think he's ever going to have that season where he puts it all together. And like you said, Charlie, every time I go check his earned run average after a start, I'm expecting it to be much higher than it is. And it's not. I mean, he's currently sitting at 381. Without looking, I'm like, oh, it's got to be like 4.5 by now. And, you know, part of that is, like you said, those home runs are typically just solos. So he's like Hauk. He's kind of redlined right now. He's over his all-time high. I don't really know how long of a career he's going to have. I don't know. I still don't know who the real Cutter Crawford is, but he looks tired, and I think the league has figured him out. So it's time for him to kind of figure out those counter moves. You're kind of hoping Andrew Bailey will in part, you know, mastermind that and map out a course for him. But this rotation looks cooked. I mean, we're not going to get really into Pivetta, but Cora had to pull him after 4 2/3. He'd only given up two hits and a walk, but who do you trust right now? Bayo's been pitching the best of anyone in the last 4 or 5 starts. We got Paxton going in game one of the Royal Series. That'll be tonight for the listening audience. But I don't know how you get there with this rotation. And as Jason would say, they're just kind of regressing to the mean at this point after a spectacular start.
Yeah, I mean, he's pitching differently. Like, when there's nobody on base, he pounds the strike zone a lot more consistently, which Jeremy already talked about it. Like, that middle, like, kind of lower half of the plate, they're just teeing off. I mean, that pitch in that location is prime time for launch. Like, it's just going to be home run haven whenever he pitches, if there's nobody on base. Like, as soon as he gives up a home run, it's like, okay, cool, time to buckle down. Then he buckles down. Then there's nobody on base again. Then we're hammering the strike zone again. more home runs. I mean, I don't know the last pitcher, and I don't know who's going to have this statistic, that's given up 10 of the last 12 home runs, all being solo shots. It was like, you know, O'Neill, like Tyler O'Neill early this year, every home run he had was a solo home run, had like 9 home runs and 11 RBIs. It was the weirdest line, you know, to be like one of the leaders in home runs, but you barely have more than, you know, one extra RBI. They're all solo jobs. So he's going to have to make an adjustment. A couple of other dishonorable mentions here. Bernardino already talked about it. He just let the doors get blown right off in that game. Missed throw in the center field that allowed the runners to advance to second, third. Both of those runners scored. One was inherited. Sadon, as we talked about earlier, was able to throw one of them out at home. Thank God. Terry, your favorite player, Yoshida, also went 0 for 11 with an RBI in this one. But I'm really not going to hammer this one because Yoshida's been one of our bright stars in the last, I don't know how many series. I mean, the guy was going off. And you know what? If this is the one series where he just didn't have it, that's fine. Last month, hit 333, had 3 homers and 20 RBIs. You're allowed to go 0 for once in a while. That's fine. Anything you guys want to add for dishonorable mentions? Terry or Jeremy, either one.
No. Yoshida on Sunday was able to draw a couple of walks. So that's a good sign that he's about to come out of it, in my opinion.
I agree. Terry?
Just one last note about the pitching in general. In the last month, the Red Sox are tied with the Rockies atop of Major League Baseball for most home runs given up, 42 in the last month. The Mets have 39, Phillies have 38, the White Sox are at 37. That's your top five. So
not good.
Not good.
Woof. Woof. Well, that is going to do it for all the bastards. Everyone, have a great one. Take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.